We're up to the Doshot Taran, page Chaf Hey in the Machon Shalem edition, in the Mishor edition, page Chaf Hey in the Machon Shalem edition, page Yud Chet. And we'll start the paragraph from the beginning. Hinei niglaim ken shaguf v'chochtav enam notnim kiyum v'amada la'nefesh. What's been revealed, says the Ran, according to our explanation of how the Eitz Hadas works, is that the physical aspects, the body and its strengths, they're not what sustains the soul, the spiritual part of the human being, but rather they weaken the soul. The fact that the soul is fused together with the body, that weakens the soul's powers. What's really fitting is that when you get rid of this inhibitor, so to speak, the physical body, then the soul can attain wholeness. Meaning, our body is acting as an inhibitor to our soul. God fused them together, and to an extent, the body constrains the soul from reaching its wholeness. The soul gives life to the body, and the soul cannot attain true wholeness till the body passes away. When a person passes away, then the soul can advance to true wholeness. And whenever the Torah gives us a promise, so to speak, about something physical, al ze atzad, you have to understand it in this direction. Shim yireh lachu sheyesh la'adam dvikut binyan ha'eloki, v'hu umed binyan muneh oto mehasig shehu aguf. If we see, yireh lachu, what we see is sheyesh la'adam dvikut binyan ha'eloki, that a person has the capacity to bond with God. A person does have a capacity to connect with his creator. Even though he's in a state, he's right now in a state where there's something constraining him, preventing him from completely connecting with his creator. That's his physical body. The fact that we are with a physical body, that limits our capacity to be spiritual, to be holy. We have to go to the bathroom, we have to eat, we have to drink, we have to desire, we are limited. The physical aspects of our being limit our spiritual potential. And safek, undoubtedly, shiye muvtach, that the promise a person gets is liyot advikut shalem kefi ma sheefshal. God says, I will give you the capacity to connect with me in the as whole a fashion as is possible. Kasha yutzar hametzik amoneh. When the inhibitor is removed, God says, I'll give you the potential to really connect with me.
In Gan Eden, Adam, was he also this inhibitors?
So the way the Ran explained it was that God's initial creation of Adam, God's initial creation was with a body that was very weak. Adam HaRishon, the Ran said, was purposely created weak so that the primary part of his life was his nefesh. And it was only when they ate from the forbidden fruit that the Ran said the forbidden fruit strengthened their body. That's why the woman thought, that's a great idea. I see this is a healthy food. And what she did not know was that when she's strengthening the body, she's making him a more physical being. And as such, that will ultimately cause his death because he's a more physical being. The soul is eternal. The soul will never die. But the second that she ate from the forbidden fruit and she fed him from the forbidden fruit, then he's no longer a primarily spiritual being. He is a more physical being. And that's why she caused his demise. That's what the Ran had said, that it wasn't a punishment, the fact that they would die. It was just a natural result of what they did. If you eat from it, God says, you will ultimately die because you will become a more physical being. It will strengthen the physical parts of your life. Now, when the Torah promises us a better future, the Torah is promising us the capacity to overcome those limitations that the body places upon us, that the physical aspects of our life place upon us. Mitzuraf al ze she'en safek she'emunot bezmanim ahem haya inyanam noheg al ader she'noheg minhag mishpat emunot asher anachnu betocham. We add to this that undoubtedly in those times people believed very similar to what people believe today. רצוני לומר שהיו כולם מבטיחות על הגמול העתיד לנפש אחרי הפרדה מן הגוף. What I mean to say, says the Ran, is that undoubtedly when the Torah was given, you had all the faiths promising people, you do what we say, you burn your kids alive, you just serve our idols, and ultimately when you die, things will be much better. Undoubtedly, says the Ran, that was what the religions were promising, because he says that's what religions promise today too. So the world hasn't changed. If that's what they're promising today, I'm sure that's what they were promising back then. Rezono lomar, just a second, guys. So the Ran is saying that the religions were all focused on making promises. Ultimately, Ratzoni lomar, what I mean to say, shayu kulam avtichot al gmula atid lanefesh, that all the religions were promising for the future, what the soul will get, acharei hipardam me'aguf, after the soul separates from the body. Vayu machikim edehim. And how could they get away with this? Because they'd say, it's still going to come. When you die, believe me, you just be a suicide bomber, you'll get to the other world, and oh, we have all the good things waiting for you. They can make promises that are way off after a person dies, because that way they don't have to pay up. Go prove if it did happen or didn't happen. But, ki mitzad shelo ayu nochalim ha'emet, lo yechlu latet od karov u'muchash. Because they were full of lies, they didn't really have any truth to them. They couldn't make any promises that were up close and would have to come true in the near future. But when God came and gave us the Torah, amongst all the other nations who had religions that could only promise things in a distant future, just like our Torah is on a totally different level than other religions' works, by the same token, ken hevdila yehudeha. The Torah's promises are on a totally different level than the promises of every other religion. Ritzoni lomar, what I mean to say, chimtautam, that the Torah made good on its promises. The Torah says, you keep the Torah, I'll give you the land of Israel. God gave us the land of Israel. You keep the Torah, I'll make you flourish in the land of Israel. We flourished in the land of Israel. The Torah came and gave us mundane promises in contradistinction with every other religion that focused their promises on a futuristic world. You'll die and you'll see that it was good to live a life of an ascetic. You'll see it was good to live a life of this religion or that religion. So came along the Torah, and just like the Torah is on a totally different level, the Torah said, I promise you now, you keep my Torah in the land of Israel, I'll make it good. You read the parasha of Ahayim Shema, Hashem says, you keep my Torah, I'm telling you, you'll have fruits, you'll have vegetables, you'll have rain, you'll have what you need. You'll flourish in the land of Israel. The Torah made good on its promises what no other religion could do.
It's just what my
The Ran is really coming to answer a very fundamental question that people have. Why does the Torah give us mundane promises? And why doesn't the Torah openly speak about a world to come? So the first question, why does the Torah give us mundane promises? The Ran answered. He said that's specifically the proof, one of the things that the Torah said is way different than the other religions, that the Torah makes promises good here and now. If the Jewish people as a people will keep the Torah, God says, I will make it good for the Jewish people as a people. And we saw that during the first millennium when we were in the land of Israel. In Israel, exiled back in Israel, you had a millennium where things were working that way. The Jewish people were as a whole. And the prophets told them, you guys sin, you're going to be exiled. You guys sin, there won't be rain. You guys sin, there'll be locusts. And every time, that's exactly what happened. Very physical and very immediate. Now, this isn't a soothsayer. This isn't some kind of tarot card reader telling you, I see somewhere in your future. No, the prophets told them exactly what would happen if they do it and what would happen if they don't. And that all came, they made good on their promises right away. And just like one of the basic concepts in the Torah, it was the Exodus from Egypt. That through the Exodus, it became clear that God is attached to us. All the Paro stargazers, they couldn't do miracles like Moshe and Aaron did. They found themselves at a dead end. With all their different ways of making their sorcery at the end of the day, they couldn't keep up with God's prophets. By the same token, just like Moshe's miracles, Moshe did face up, right there standing before them, he did miracles. By the same token, the Torah's promises where straight away Hashem said, I'm going to promise you things you'll see with your naked eye. She'inyan hu lo tuchal Torah acheret liyed. That's something that no other Torah can make promises. And if the Torah would come and say, you keep the Torah, and in the world to come, things will be good for you. If that's what the Torah would have said, then the naked eye, one would think the Torah is just like every other religion. It's telling you, you do what I'm telling you, and believe me, it'll be good for you. And the Torah didn't want to do that. And then no one would know that what Hashem is promising us is much better than what all the other religions are promising. Being that all religions promise things that you cannot see, you have no idea what's there. No one knows what happens after death. No one's come back and told us, I'm telling you it is this way or is that way. Every other religion could say, I'm better than the Torah, or I'm just like the Torah, or I'm the true religion, because I'm telling you, when you'll get to the next world, you'll see I was right. And that's why the Torah says at the end of the Torah, you watch the Torah, you perform the Torah, because on this point, this is where the nations see that you're smarter, this is where the nations look up to you, because they know that your Torah is giving you promises here and now. This is the advantage of the Torah. This is one of the points the nations look up to the Torah and say we can't compete. The Torah says. Because Hashem says, I'm telling you, you as a people, if the Jewish people keep the Torah, the Jewish people will have it good. What nation has their God promised them that things will work that way? None, Hashem says. I promise it. Only I can promise it, and only I can make good on my promise. Compare the Torah. That's what Hashem says. What other nation has God so close to them that God can make them promises and pay good on the promises? I'm telling you, you keep the Torah, I'm going to bring you into the land of Israel. I'm telling you, you won't keep the Torah, I'll exile you from the land of Israel. So Hashem says this, and this is how the Ran's explaining that this is the point that the nations look at us and say, wow, what an amazing nation. Look at how close God is to them. Look at how he makes promises and he makes good in the here and now. They don't have to have their prophets or their leaders promise them things in a futuristic world. They make good on their promises here. And now, says the Ran, now that we understand that, we've really done away with a big question. The verse over there says, you keep the statutes. Like our parsha, those are the laws that one cannot explain logically. The Torah tells us, don't wear wool and linen together. Go explain that. Why? Torah says, so we do it. But do we understand why? We don't understand why. Torah tells us, don't eat meat and milk together. Do we understand why? We don't understand it. Go explain why. God said so, that's what we're doing.
Because don't stew teeth in milk of this mouse.
Fine, but at the end of the day, what's the difference if I eat a cheeseburger or I eat a burger and then 6 hours later I eat cheese? What's the difference? So these are things that are called chukim, they're statutes. They're things that we can't explain with our own logic. So the Torah says, you should know that the nations, when they see you keeping the statutes, they admire you, they look up to you, they say, what a smart nation is this? What do you mean? How come they look at us, they see us performing mitzvot, which are chukim, which seem to be illogical, and then they say, wow, what an amazing nation that is. Why? How does that, what's the logic in that puzzle, says the Ran? V'shebavuram yomru, how could it be that because of the statutes, the nations will say, Rakam chacham v'navon agoya gadol hazeh, this great nation, wow, they're so smart, they're so intelligent. It would seem the exact opposite. Undoubtedly, chukim are statutes. They're laws that we don't know the reasoning behind them. And those are the things that the nations, when they want to refute the Torah, they come and they use these as sources. You think your Torah makes sense? You think your Torah is right? Explain this to me. Then they start quoting Tos mitzvot that we don't know the reasoning behind them. So how could it be that these are the mitzvot that the Torah says, because of these mitzvot, the nations will emulate you. Because of these mitzvot, the nations will look up to you. And being that that's so, what's really fitting is, that because of these statutes, the nations will say, look at what a stupid nation they are. They don't know why they're not eating meat and milk, and yet they don't eat meat and milk. It would make, we would think that these are the source of mocking, that the nations would look at us and say, look at them, they don't even know what they're doing. They don't understand it. אבל הפסוק הזה נמשך ונקשר עם הפסוק הבא אחריו. But really, this pasuk is connected to the pasuk after it. התשיעה השני נותן טעם לראשון, that the next pasuk is really explaining the previous pasuk. והוא אומרו, and that's what the next pasuk says, כי מי גוי גדול אשר לא אלוהים קרובים אליו? What nation is so great that God is close to them? ירצה בזה, what this pasuk means to say is, כי כשיראו האומות הנ"ל שהם צועקים ואינם נענים, that when the nations see that they call their gods and no one's answering them. They're really at the hands of nature. They can't see that when they pray and when they do things right, anything changes in the world on their behalf. ויראו אותנו קרובים אל השם יתברך, and they see us that we are close to Hashem. עד שעונה אותנו בכל קוראינו לו, that when we as a people call out to Hashem, Hashem answers us. על כוחם יתבוננו וידונו עלינו, then they have no choice but to take a good look and think of us. בחוכמה ותבונה עד שהעניין האלוקי דבק בנו ולא בהם. And recognize that, wait a second, there must be something smart about what they're doing. We don't get it, but it must be something godly, because you see that when they pray, it works. You see that God answers the Jewish people. ועדיין צריך ביור, and still we need to explain, למה יחסה לחוקים שאין טעמם נודע, יותר מכל תורה כולה. Why did the pasuk say it specifically about the statutes? You have a whole Torah. For the statutes, they look up to us, because we have laws that we don't understand. That still needs explanation. That tshuva. So the answer is, says the Ran, should we pause here? If we continue here, we won't get to do Ramban. So it's your call. Should we continue or do a little bit of Ramban? Yitzchak, what's the vote? Continue? Okay. That tshuva. So the answer is, says the Ran, ki kol pal sheyitzave la'asot inyan zal bilti noheg derech hekesh. Any time that a person is told to do something that seems strange, something which you can't figure out logically, when you're told to do something like that, when you look into something like that, you have to come to one of two conclusions. Someone tells you you want to be successful in business, every morning take your toothbrush after you brush your teeth, brush your ears. You look at it and you have to think one of two things. You say either, if the guy who's telling you to do this is unusually wise, or else he's stupid. Meaning, what the guy who tells you this, he tells you, you want to know the secret to success in business? This is how you do it. So you'll look at him and you'll ask yourself, wait a second. If he's a guy who's been exceptionally successful, so maybe he knows what he's talking about. If he's very smart, maybe he knows what he's talking about. Or else you're going to say, maybe he's stupid. He thinks this is the key to success in business? No, that can't be the key to success in business. But when someone tells you something illogical, you have to say, either he's stupid, and that's why it's illogical, or I'm stupid. He knows so much more than me, that's why it's illogical to me. But you have to, when someone tells you something that doesn't fit your logic, you have one of two choices. You're posed with a question. Who's the one that's stupid here, me or him? But someone's stupid. So that's what the Ran says. So Hashem gave us mitzvot that we don't understand. Is it because we're lacking, or the one who's giving it? So obviously, we know it's not the one who's giving it. So the Torah tells us, "Vehu shim yireh mimenu shimashech ba'ado atachlit asher elav." If a person sees that the one who's telling him to do this, he's successful. He's telling him, this is what you should do, and he is successful. Kevan sheyeh muchzak oseo lechacham muflag shu masig atachlit at shelo yisigeu shar anashim. He sees, wait a second, he's made his millions, other people haven't. He does succeed where other people don't. But if he sees that this guy is not successful, this is a guy who every business he opened flopped, then he's coming and giving you advice. You see, he cannot succeed at what he's promising. So you walk away thinking, he's stupid. That's why he's not successful. That's why he's giving me this advice. What's an example of this? There was a chief general of Ammon named Naaman. And he had a skin disease called tzaraats. So he came to Israel, and he was given advice. He had a Jewish maid that he captured, and she told his wife, you know, let him go. There's a good prophet in Israel. He knows how to do wonders. Let him go to him. So Naaman comes with his whole battalion. He goes with a message from the king of Ammon to Ammon, to the Jewish king. And he tells him, he brings him a letter, please cure my chief general from his tzaraas. So the king thinks this is a ploy. This is they're looking for a reason to attack. So the king tears his clothes. He tells his advisors, "What does that king think? That I'm God? I could cure a person?" Elisha, the prophet, knows with prophecy that this is what happened. So he sends a lad to the king, and he tells him, "Tell him to send him to me. Let him know that God is with the Jewish people." So the king tells Naaman, "Go to the prophet Elisha." Naaman takes his forces. He comes and camps outside Elisha's home. He's waiting for Elisha to come out and wave a wand and say incantations and do who knows what and cure. Elisha sends a lad outside. He doesn't even see Naaman. And the lad tells Naaman, he tells him, the prophet says, go to the Yarden, go to the Jordanian River, dunk over there and you'll be cured. So Naaman gets all upset. He says, this is ridiculous. I have the greatest waters by me in Ammon. Waters that are 10 times better than the Jordanian rivers. And I wasn't cured. Halotov, Amana, Ufarpar, Nari, Damesek, the Amana and Parpar, the different rivers of Damascus, they're so much better than the Jordanian river. I'm going to go immerse in the Jordanian river? This is ridiculous. I was sure he'd come and do, wave his wand and do all kinds of things to cure me. This is how he'll cure me. So he's very upset. And one of his lads tell him, you know, you got nothing to lose. This is what he said to do. Why don't you do it? So Naaman says, okay, fine. He takes his horse, he rides out with his battalion to the Jordanian River, dunks in the Jordanian River, and he comes up, and his skin is beautiful like a baby's skin. So then he's humble, and he says, wait a second, wow, how'd that happen? So then he comes back, and this time when he comes to Elisha, he gets off his horse, and he bows before the prophet. He doesn't stand outside on top of his horse with his whole battalion waiting for the prophet to come out to him. He's humble. He goes and he bows before the prophet and he says, wow, now I know that God is among Israel. Now I know that you're a true prophet. That's, in a nutshell, the story. So, in Malachim, what's called Malachim Beis, second book of Malachim. So, Naaman, he says, an example of this is what happened with Naaman and Elisha. Vehu, ki kasher alach elav lerapoto mitzarato, that when Naaman went to Elisha to cure him from his tzaras, he thought Elisha would come out, he'd pray, he'd call in God's different names, and had Elisha cured him in such a fashion, had he come out and said all kinds of things and cured him, he wouldn't have thought it was something so unusual. He'd heard that there were warlocks, there were magicians, there were people who said incantations. There were all kinds of ways of curing a person, so that wouldn't have amazed him. Because everyone really agrees that God listens to people's prayers. Then Naaman would have walked away and said, okay, this is a man of God. He prayed to God. God cured me. I understand. And he would have walked away. But when Elisha told him, go to the Jordanian River, the place where all the dirt gets spilled into the river, the Jordanian River is really a, so to speak, a purification river. It's a spot where the river dumps all its dump and then keeps flowing and gets purified by the time it hits Damascus. So he's telling him, go there and dunk and you'll be better. Then, in Naaman's mind, there was no logic that should cure him. Then Naaman got angry. So Naaman cursed, he blasphemed, he cursed the king, he cursed his God. Naaman said, I thought that the prophet would come out to me, wave his wand, say incantations. My rivers where I come from are so much better than the Jordanian. If that's the cure, then I'll go there and dunk in my rivers. Because this, that he couldn't figure out that this would be a successful cure. So he thinks, the guy who's telling me to do this, or whoever does it, is doing a stupid act. He's telling me to do something stupid, and if I do it, I'm stupid. That's what Naaman thought initially. But ultimately, he himself saw that exactly what the prophet said would happen, that's exactly what happened. He went into the Jordanian, he came out cured. And that the prophet cured him in a way that did not fit into his logic, in a way that was completely illogical to him. Amar, then Naaman came back And then Haman said, "Hinena yadati ki en Elokim b'chol aretz ki im b'Yisrael." Now I know that God is not amongst anyone else but among Israel. Klomar, meaning what he meant to say is shemitzat kuvatam elav, because they're so close to Hashem, hem asigin dvarim lo yisharei ma'akesh b'shum panim. Because they're so close to God, they know things that you cannot figure out logically. They know things that they are science and the scientific method cannot figure out. So he said, now I understand. Meaning, he said, it doesn't make sense to me. But because it doesn't make sense to me, now I know that they know things that are beyond my logic. And I see, because I see the products, that they can do things that no one else can. So that's the example. Now we're going back to the pasuk. God says, you keep the mitzvot, which are completely illogical. You can't explain them. The nations can't understand them. By the same token, we can understand this verse. Yomar, what God is telling us is, ki kasher shmirateinu achukim, that when we keep the laws that are statutes, we don't know the logic behind them. Hi chokhmateinu uvinateinu leinei amim. The nations look on us and they say, look at how smart this nation is. Look at how much they know. Ki achar shehem roim she'inyan Elokim davek banu, when they see that God is with the Jewish people, he doesn't let them be annihilated, he's connected to the Jewish people, nation after nation has tried, we're still around, they see that God is with us. They see that all other religions seem to be equal to our Torah on the surface. They all say, you look at every nation, they have their laws, they say don't steal, they say don't kill, every nation has their way of living. So when you look at the logical aspects of the laws, so every nation has their legal system. Meaning they also have laws that say don't steal, don't murder, and similar laws. But the thing that singles out our Torah, and especially now, that's the things the Torah tell us that we cannot explain. That the Torah tells us don't eat meat and milk. We don't know why. V'haya nira ayin be'ayin she'inyan Eloki davek banu. And this only works, remember, he said, when you do something that doesn't make sense to people, either you're stupid or they're stupid. Someone here is missing something. So the only reason people look at us when we keep the chukim, when we keep the things that are illogical, and they say, wow, that's amazing, is because that God is with us. Because in all other areas, they see that God is with us. Yomru, then they come to the conclusion, Rak am chacham v'navon ha-goy ha-gadol hazeh. This nation is nothing but a wise and understanding nation. Uva zeh ha-lashon, kemdaber al-inyan, lo haya ra'uy lo'odot oto. Ela she'i efshar likpor bo. And the way the verse words it, is that the nations are forced to reach this conclusion. They're saying, we have no choice, we must admit, boy, we wouldn't like to admit it, but the truth is, they're smart. Ela she'i efshar likpor bo, mitzad ra'oto v'igaloto lachush. But we can't deny it because it's so obvious and evident. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we'll complete the Drashot Aran, where he explains why the Torah didn't have to speak about the world to come. You don't find the pasuk in the Torah that discusses the world to come. That's Be'ezrat Hashem, the concluding point of this first speech of the Drashot Aran.
Does it